The Pentagon's been warning for years that the decade-long budget caps Congress set in place 4 years ago won't work, at least if DOD hopes to execute the defense strategy that's on the books right now. With sequestration set to return this year, unless Congress acts otherwise, officials say they'll try to make things a bit less abstract and publish a report that details exactly what would happen to individual bases and weapons systems with a $30 billion cut. Federal News Radio's Jared Serbu writes about DOD's sequestration messaging strategy as part of this week's edition of Inside the Reporter's Notebook.
What I think we're going to see pretty soon here is some pretty detailed accountings of what DOD actually thinks would happen if sequestration returns in fiscal year 2016. Remember, we've been under sort of a two-year reprieve across the government ever since the 2013 so-called Ryan Murray deal, which lifted the Budget Control Act caps to what everyone thought was basically an acceptable level. But if nothing changes, we're back to the original BCA caps that everyone thought was unacceptable that were set back in 2013. Those are scheduled to go back into effect at the beginning of fiscal year 16, which is obviously the beginning of October, if nothing else changes. So what DOD thinks they're going to do is draw up a pretty detailed document of specifically which systems, which weapons platforms, which bases would be affected, and what the precise discrete effects of sequestration would be if we do go back to those BCA caps. And you'll remember this has been done before, Tom. They released a 30-35 page report last year talking about sequestration's potential impacts on the 2015 budget, but it was kind of a moot point by then because going back to that Ryan Murray agreement, sequestration was, not going to happen last year. So the department thinks it will get some more attention this time. That's why they're going to give it another go. Another reason it might be more noteworthy this time is because it would really be the only written explanation from DOD of what they think would happen at those BCA levels. Because remember, last year they actually built two different budgets, one at basically the president's budget level and one at, the BCA cap level. So you had some pretty detailed accounting here. They deliberately decided not to do that this year because it was just such a tremendous strain on a pretty well stretched financial management workforce already, and it didn't seem to do much good last year anyway. So here's Mike McCord, DOD's chief financial officer and comptroller, talking about this with a few reporters last week at the Pentagon.
And so we will in all likelihood produce and submit a similar document this time with similar level of detail. And it may have more, it may engender more discussion this year just because sequester is a real possibility this year, unlike last year. We need to show the new secretary, of course, a draft document like that and talk with him about different ways, if that's the best way to handle it or not. And that's something we haven't been able to do in his one day on the job so far. I think there'll be some opportunities to talk about it as it affects the department as in terms of mission output, not just in terms of as important as it are, as kind of the inputs and what it means to cuts at a particular base or cuts to a furlough or something like that. I think that's something that the chairman and the vice chairman would probably like to be able to talk about a little bit about is how it affects the joint force.
Again, that's Mike McCord, the DOD CFO and comptroller, talking with a few of us reporters at the Pentagon last week. And just to note one other thing about what DOD thinks would happen under sequestration, it's been a priority from OMB and from many members of Congress to start phasing out the overseas contingency operations budget that was originally set up to fund the wars in Afghanistan. Over the years, a lot of things that you must say are not really directly connected to those operations have snuck into OCO. And so OMB has told DOD, the State Department, USAID, the intelligence community to come up with a plan to start phasing those things back into the base budget. That would basically become impossible if the original BCA caps return because the base budget would be capped at $499 billion. If that stays in place, there's simply no room for that extra, $50 billion in DOD alone to move back into the base. So that plan would basically go out the window, even if they do succeed in drawing it up.
So, Jared, what would the delta be if sequestration comes in? You'd mentioned $499 for the base budget. Just review quickly what the proposed budget is for 2016 that came out from the administration a few weeks ago.
Yeah, so it's basically $33 billion above the caps is what they've requested. That's still below what they had targeted in the so-called Future Years Defense Plan, the FYDP, as of a few years ago. But they think that at least at that level, they can continue to execute the defense strategy. The message all along is at the BCA cap level, that 499 level, they'd basically have to go back to the drawing board.
Even the Pentagon can do a few things with another $33 billion.
Absolutely, that's right.
All right, so we have no idea, though, what's going to happen. Right now, they've got to, as we speak, they've got to get through Homeland Security funding, which I guess is the closer to the hilt issue
right
now.
Yeah, that's definitely the near-term emergency right now. And yeah, it's a long road between now and the start of the next fiscal year. We have not, as you mentioned, we just saw the budget drop earlier this month. We still have to get through the posture hearings from all the military services. And I think starting probably late in March or early in April, we're going to start hearing testimony from Ash Carter, the new defense secretary. He's still kind of getting up to speed. But in between now and then, we're going to start hearing from each of the military services as their service chiefs go up to the Hill and start briefing their own individual service budgets.
And he took a Q&A while on that surprise trip to Afghanistan pretty early on. If you believe the press releases, as the way the Pentagon described it, he did get a question about pay and benefits, particularly retirement, and was not too committal on what would happen, but said that it's definitely on the table, some changes there.
Yeah, I mean, I think the department, and even while he was still Deputy Defense Secretary, has made clear that they've got to see some changes in pay and benefits, especially in the area of medical and retirement costs. They do, of course, have to submit a report. Actually, it's really the administration that has to submit a report based on the Military Compensation and Retirement Modernization Commission's final report. They have 60 days from the release of that report, which is earlier this month, to basically send to Congress a yay or nay, with probably some amendments around the edges that say we agree in this area, we disagree in this area. So that will be our first indication post-budget of where they'd like to head with pay and benefits.
Jared Serbu is Federal News Radio's DOD reporter. And also in your reporter's notebook today, there is cloud computing back on DOD. Do they ever figure this out, or is it a continuously evolving scheme for how they want to do cloud computing?
No, it's definitely going to be continually evolving. There was, you know, really a major milestone in this last month when DoD released its first ever security requirements guide for cloud computing, for commercial cloud computing, for procuring cloud throughout the department. And really what that did is it took the government-wide FedRAMP program and said FedRAMP in and of itself is good enough for these certain low security levels, basically what they call levels 1 and 2, unclassified information that's, you know, publicly releasable or otherwise very low security concerns. And then for the higher levels, they have a scheme called FedRAMP Plus, which was also part of that security requirements guide. But the key thing about that is, as you allude to, this is just version one of that SRG. They're going to do quarterly releases that are going to continue to refine and update that and probably eventually get up to the point where they can start describing what the security controls would need to be in order to store even classified data in commercial clouds. They're not quite there yet. What has happened recently with that is back earlier this month on February 8th, this is what we wrote about in the notebook this week, is DoD issued what's called a class deviation, which in addition to just having these security controls out there, it's going to immediately require that a lot of these controls, especially in the area of privacy and security and data breach notification, get built into contract language right away. And that change is effective immediately. But what that class deviation does, as many of our listeners know, is it basically, I don't want to say sidesteps, but definitely accelerates the normal process that you would have to go through if you're going in and changing the federal acquisition regulation, or in this case, the defense portion of that, the DFARS. So this puts the changes into effect right away, and in the meantime, they are building a separate FAR case to put these changes in on a more permanent basis.
Yeah, class deviation sounds like someone you send to reform school. And the other thing I wanted to ask you about was there's movement on the use of lowest price technically acceptable in the Pentagon, and I'm sure contractors are looking at that one very closely.
Yeah, less movement than we originally thought, actually. So we talked about this in an earlier version of the notebook. What we thought was happening was that DoD was going in and doing what I described as a new review of lowest price technically acceptable contract awards. That was based on some comments from Randall Culpepper, who's the Air Force's basically program executive officer for service contracting. He had told an FCA conference at the time I wrote this that Frank Kendall, the undersecretary for acquisition, logistics, and technology, had tasked him with doing a look across the department of how LPTA is being used. That story that I wrote back then caused some issues in the Pentagon. They do not like the idea, they don't like the suggestion even that they're taking a second look at their LPTA policies, because this is an ongoing battle between industry and the government, where industry basically thinks this is, you know, the worst thing that's happening in defense acquisition, that LPTA is being used excessively and inappropriately. The DoD line on that is, look, we use it when it's appropriate. We're not going to apologize for asking for low prices. And we have a GAO report that backs us up on this, and that's basically right. So the message is that we are taking a look at LPTA, which basically entails we're trying to further define what technically acceptable is, but there's no system-wide review of how we're using it. Let me play a quick clip from Shay Assad, the Director of Defense Pricing, laying this out in an interview recently.
You know, it's been sampled. GAO sample, they can come in again, they're welcome to do it. And it's just not a problem that we see. You know, one of the things, we had a discussion with industry in early November. We had them down at DAU for a full day. Mm-hmm. Some of this we talked about. And the fact is, we're not going to apologize for making price more important. And we think that there's enough evidence to dispel the myth that we're out there demanding that our people use LPTA techniques. And so you can say, well, how many times do you have to examine it and say, look, the data just says we're not doing what it is you say you're doing.
So frankly, Tom, this is kind of a frustrating semantics fight that we've been having with DOD as to whether or not there actually is an LPTA review going on or not. After several weeks of back and forth, they did send us a written statement explaining that, I'll just read from part of it. We've posted the whole thing on our website. But Mr. Culpepper is leading two teams under Better Buying Power 3.0 under service acquisition. As part of that effort, they're taking a holistic look at service contracts, including the way the performance of work statement is written and the source selection methodology. LPTA is a factor in that they're looking at the source selection methodology, but they insist there is no department-wide review of LPTA contracts.